are faster than light, ultra-high-tech, 34th century lives make it easy for us to become disconnected from the natural world or worlds, so that it's important we take time to reconnect with our primal roots. So when the holidays like Interplanetary Forestry Day come up, buccaneers like to take are quick to get involved. The mighty forests of old Earth are magical places which mark passings of seasons and set the scene for a fairy tale and clean the very air we breathe. Now, it can be tricky to recreate this kind of thing on a rundown backwater space station, which smells rather faintly of cabbages, even in a vacuum, and has the kind of plumbing that would give Heath Robinson a migraine. But it'll take more than that to keep Hutton Truckers down. Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Down on the lower Rotunda budget, clones for you are doing a special on a batch of clones which turned a bit green after accidental exposure to gamma radiation. Although we have been seen some returns due to anger issues. Hangar 2 has been turned into a brain tree garden where couples can go for romantic walks among the pulsating glow in the dark landscape or picnic under the creepy canopy of a brain fruit. They can have disabled... They have even, I should say, I'm doing really well today, disabled the landing pad.
Need more bait.
So the hangar doesn't open to expose the whole thing to space every time someone requests docking permission. Well, we don't want to repeat of last year, do we? Some local children have bunked off school to go on a voyage of discovery among the various strange tanks and life support machinery down on Z-Deck. In the absence of real trees and vines, they've made a camp among the main cooling towers, complete with hammocks made from whatever they could find, a holo projector, and make it look all forestry. As a team of engineers approach the camp, they can hear cheerful voices singing the lumberjack song. They are impressed by the ingenuity that has gone on in the building of the camp. When asked where they found those cables to make the hammocks and the rope swing, the children just looked at the engineering team blankly. One of them points across to the large machine in the corner with a complex-looking manifold which really should have a spider web of pipes and hoses attached to it. A display above the panel shows blinking red lights and urgent-looking warning messages. They spring into action, connecting the hoses to any connectors that will fit, and then restart the machine. Among many of the messages, one appears in blue. A senior tech reads it out and breathes a sigh of relief. They look at the other members of the team and say,
"Our mics are live." Good evening, Commanders. I'm Sandy Grevis, and welcome to this week's show. I'll be mashing the buttons tonight, so if anything catches fire, it's probably my fault.
While Sandy's playing with the knobs, I'm proud to announce my latest series of Autumn Scene Watch, where I sit in the corner with binoculars and watch all those lovely little seams hatch.
Well, they're definitely not an endangered species, not tonight. If you do see any more, I've got the template apology ready to go.
And just in case they're naughty, I've got my pan on standby. I've got a black belt in panology and a degree in rocket.
And I'm Mike Rochburns, and I got asked back for some reason.
And now, the headlines.
Marope mining mishap mystifies engineers.
Mandalay test firing, the 11 wasn't just for volume.
Kane's quiet coup, prepping for power without the Overlord vibe.
Shinra to Desra's post-Thargoid conundrum. Clean up collectibles and a mop hero.
404 degrees. Weather not found.
And I'm hoping to influence you to influence us.
First this evening, a minor mining mission in the Marope system took a dramatic turn this week when automated equipment experienced an unexpected and rather inconvenient malfunction. The team, sent to gather valuable materials from Marope 5C, found themselves in a precarious position after their precision drills, rather than burrowing into the rich mineral deposits, decided instead to dance a delicate but damaging duet into one another. Early reports suggest that the drill's targeting systems became confused by local magnetic anomalies. Instead of locking onto the designated deposit, the systems evidently deemed the nearest object, namely the other drill, as the prime source of mineral wealth. The result was a somewhat spectacular display of industrial equipment pirouetting across the landscape, showering the area with enough sparks to briefly convince nearby settlers they were witnessing an unscheduled fireworks show. "It's quite the head-scratcher," said team leader Commander Dirk Dangerous. While standing beside the smouldering remains of what had once been a cutting-edge technology, we triple-checked the alignment before we started. At one point, both drills looked like they were doing a ballet. Graceful, but financially dangerous. Engineers are currently sifting through the wreckage in a desperate bid to pinpoint the problem. Early theories range from simple calibration errors to a far more dramatic cause. Rumours of Thargoid interference. According to one over-enthusiastic technician, the drills may have been hypnotised by alien signals. Though how an extraterrestrial influence would prompt mining gear to engage in a mid-operation joust remains somewhat unclear. "Frankly, I'm not buying the alien angle," commented seasoned miner Nora Nottingham as she watched yet another overcomplicated diagnostic scan. "The machinery's probably just on the fritz again. The last time we had a problem like this, it was down to some joker wiring up the control panel backwards. But hey, at least it wasn't another planetary collapse." In the meantime, the local mining consortium, Marope Miners United, has issued a statement reassuring investors that despite the minor mechanical mishap, production quotas will still be met. To compensate for the lost time and lost equipment, they have vowed to deploy additional mining vessels and have offered affected crew members a free round of drinks back at the orbital bar. Whether this will be enough to raise spirits remains to be seen, though early indications suggest that only the high-grade gin on offer will come close. As for Commander Dangerous, his team is underrated by the disaster. And undeterred even. Undeterred by the disaster. We'll get this sorted after all. It's just another day in the Marope system. In other news, security forces have been alerted to an unusual uptick in transmissions from the nearby crashed Thargoid ships. While officials stress that these incidents are unrelated, a few anxious miners have taken to carrying personal defense lasers, in case the drills weren't the only things acting up.
In what can only be described as an overzealous demonstration of what happens when you push things too far, the latest test of the Mandalay's engines have left several test pilots recovering in medbays, and others trying to figure out what day it is. Early trials of the Mandalay, set to launch in coming weeks, have shown just how potent its propulsion systems can be. Possibly too potent. During a particularly enthusiastic test firing, the engine, designed to be a game-changer in interstellar travel, catapulted several commanders across the system faster than anyone anticipated. One pilot, dazed and somewhat bemused, was overheard saying, "I swear I left on Tuesday and woke up the next Wednesday." The ship's acceleration was so extreme that sensors struggled to keep up, leaving the engineering team scrambling to find their errant test pilots somewhere in the outer reaches of space. It seems that the part of it seems that part of the problem was the large control knob in the engine room. A device humorously labelled with levels ranging from cautious stroll to 11. A reference to some long-forgotten ancient Cherent joke about volume controls. Unfortunately, the first test pilot clearly mistook the 11 setting as the default, much to the surprise of everyone. As a result, the Mandalay's engines ripped space-time a new one, flinging its passenger across multiple hyperspace conduits at speeds even the ship's designers hadn't foreseen. Engineers are now working to dial the settings down to something a little more sensible, somewhere between warp speed brunch and afternoon tea acceleration. One unnamed designer was overheard muttering, "Well, we never really thought anyone would actually turn it all the way up to 11. But now that we've seen the result, maybe a more reasonable max is in order." While the mishap has led to some unfortunate calendar confusion and light bruising, excitement around the Mandalay is still at an all-time high. The ship's performance, while currently pushing the boundaries of common sense, is expected to revolutionise long-distance travel when, or if, they get the settings under control. Until then, we just have to keep an eye on the clock and possibly the calendar when the next trial run kicks off. The Mandalay is still slated for its official release in coming weeks, with pilots awaiting their chance to test the ship, hopefully without temporal displacement. In the meantime, it's probably best if the engineers keep a very close eye on the engine knob, and maybe replace it with something a little less prone to over-enthusiastic twisting.
As Nakato Kane inches ever closer to her de facto ascension as a galactic power, the preparations in Tianisla are both subtle and at times absurdly over the top. Transitioning from local politician to a galactic player is no small feat. It's not just about amassing a fleet or making promises. Kane's operation is a delicate mix of military manoeuvres, political placation, and crucially, rebranding. Kane's team has been methodically building a defensive force, but without the pomp of imperial militarism. The Tianislan fleet, doubling as diplomatic couriers, look less like a show of force and more like an extra armoured tea party. There are transports disguised as humble envoys and patrol ships that just happen to be packing enough firepower to obliterate a Thargoid, or at least enough to keep a curious system governor in check. Her strategy? Not screaming overlord while securing her turf. And while the build-up has all the hallmarks of a military escalation, Kane has been quick to brush off any concerns. She has politely declined multiple offers from Alvin Defer, who was ready to give lessons in proper territory marking techniques. When it comes to claiming new territory, nothing says subtle coup quite like a good paint job. Kane's entourage has been busy requisitioning more paint than a shipyard rave, carefully planning her signature hues. Rumour has it, Tianisian stations will soon glow with friendly shades like Diplomat Blue and Alliance Green, not the menacing crimson one might expect from a rising power, but the kind of colours that say, "I'm approachable." Definitely not your new overlord. Naturally, Kane turned down Eddie Lee Wise and Sons, plus his daughters, the galaxy's go-to tailor, for a bit of flair. While esteemed tailors tried to pitch everything from imperial cloaks to pirate hats, Kane settled on more practical uniforms. Neighbourhood Captain Chic, rather than Galactic Despo. No capes, no golden thrones, and certainly no uniforms with too many sparkly bits. Still, the logistics behind this rebranding effort are staggering. According to sources, Operation Repaint is set to be a coordinated galaxy-wide campaign. Stations across multiple systems will receive their visual overhaul overnight, ensuring that when Kane is finally announced, the galaxy will wake up to her new look like it's always been there. Of course, taking over chunks of the galaxy requires more than just a fresh coat of paint. Kane's been hard at work convincing local political factions that everything is fine. Situation normal. Nothing to worry about here. Meetings with planetary councils have become weekly events where her aides reassure everyone that life under Kane's leadership will be just like it was under Mahon. Just better organised, with more colourful signage. Kane's team has been running a quiet campaign of reassurance, ensuring that local systems understand that her sudden rise isn't a radical shift, but simply the next logical step. It's all about framing, one anonymous insider mentioned. Flags need to look like they were always there, just waiting for the right wind to unfurl them. It's no secret that staging a galaxy-wide coup, without calling it that, costs a fair bit of coin. Kane's open disdain for corporate giants like Sirius has led to some interesting back-channel funding. Various industrialists and independent magnates, disillusioned with Mahon's corporatism, have stepped in to fund Kane's push for power. From creative power regulators to advanced ship modules, the supply lines are humming. But where's all the money coming from? One could speculate, but Kane's too savvy to let the galaxy see the full extent of her purse. Kane's message to the galaxy is clear. This isn't a hostile takeover. It's just a fresh start. With paintbrushes in one hand and reassurance memos in the other, she's pushing to make her rise to power as palatable as possible. After all, no one ever worried about a neighbour who's just freshened up the front garden, even if that neighbour has a few too many anti-Xeno cannons stuck behind the bushes. In short, keep calm and watch for the friendly new coat of paint coming to a system near you. Just don't ask too many questions about the armed diplomatic couriers.
Following the repulsion of the Thargoid invasion at Shinra Tadezra, the system has been left to deal with an entirely new threat. A massive amount of alien muck. With Jameson Memorial back online and pilots returning to their business, the starport now resembles more a high-tech petri dish than the bustling hub it once was. Hutton Orbital has responded to the calls for help in its own unique way, dispatching their legendary floor-mopping guy, armed with his trusty space mop and anti-Xeno bucket. Known across the galaxy for preventing bio-waste floods at Hutton and keeping floors shiny, even during station emergencies, Floor Mopping Guy is the perfect candidate to handle what remains of the Thargoid invasion. Pilots passing through Shinrata are already reporting sightings of him valiantly scrubbing down landing pads, carefully collecting any suspicious green glue in his bucket, while dodging bewildered Sirius technicians. One local remarked, "I thought I saw a Thargoid heart twitching, but then he just calmly mopped it up. I reckon he single-handedly saved us from an infestation." The cleanup, however, has turned into more than just a janitorial task. With literal piles of Thargoid biomaterial scattered across Jameson Memorial, the debate over what to do with the remains has intensified. Some entrepreneurial commanders have started requesting doggy bags for their unique finds. Rumours of Thargoid goo as the next great black market collectible are already circulating in some sectors. In a turn of events that probably shouldn't surprise anyone, Hutton Orbital's pseudo-scientific expert, LCU No Fool Like One, has been spotted poking around the mess. LCU, who once famously attempted to crossbreed barnacles with cargo canisters, don't ask, has arrived with a team of researchers, proudly equipped with containers marked Thargoid Doggy Bag. I'll try that again. Thargoid Doggy Bag contents may mutate. Whether his findings will lead to the next breakthrough in anti-Xeno warfare, or just another questionable science experiment, remains to be seen. Not to be outdone, Sirius Corporation and Azimuth Biochemicals have also shown great interest in the remains. Both megacorps have offered to pay to safely remove the biomaterial, promising it'll be used for scientific purposes. Pilots are understandably sceptical, given Azimuth's notorious track record for turning alien tech into galaxy-sized headaches. One commander quipped, "What's next? Thargoid-centered cologne? No thanks. I'm sending it all into a black hole." Despite the swirling conspiracy theories and a research team keen to dissect every last glob of Thargoid remains, floor mopping guy remains undeterred. He continues to mop up the remains, stoic in his mission to keep Shinrata Desra clean and green free. As one witness put it, the galaxy may be at war, but at least we know the floors will be spotless. And so, while the debate rages on about what to do with the alien leftovers, it's comforting to know that thanks to Hutton's unassuming hero, we won't be slipping on the Thargoid sludge anytime soon. Keep your eyes peeled for those doggy bags, though. LCU's been muttering something about fascinating new properties as he stuffed a chunk of pulsating green mass into a jar.
Today, the Galbeeb chose to commemorate the ancient soul tradition of talking about the weather. For those of us in space stations, such as the glorious orbital we call home, weather is like when Dustybot accidentally gets the station climate control buttons confused and everyone ends up a little bit damp. Just on a much bigger planetary scale. As a part of this commemoration, the station announcements were giving predictions of wind speeds about 16 times the speed of sound down the station corridors, which in Seoul would have been deemed somewhere between a stiff breeze and a hurricane. Galbeeb did put out a statement to say, "Do not worry, your climate control is not broken, you are not going to blow away." The station toy shop did notice a particular uptick in the sale of kites, which proved to be a massive disappointment to everyone, as they only work near the air circulation vents and only on Fridays. When they completely recycle all the station's air over the space of an afternoon with a new set to prevent it smelling like rancid mushrooms. Archaeologists did also ask if the announcement was in a commemoration of a weather-presenting fish who formerly got the weather forecasts wrong, but Galbeeb declined to comment. They did point out that while hurricanes happen planet-side all the time across the galaxy, and everyone should take great care to look after themselves in those situations, such things inside of a space station only really happen when someone accidentally crashes into the outside of the station, perforating the outer walls and causing the air to escape at great speed. In which case, there are more important things to worry about, like being sucked into a vacuum of space. So it was obviously a hiccup in the reporting system whereby the decimal point got misplaced by a few positions. Meanwhile, in other parts of the galaxy, weather extremist groups made the outlandish claim that weather occurs naturally. This claim, after an unexplained weather event in the outer bubble, the strange winds turned into a funnel and proceeded to draw up large phallus on the open area of a desert visible from space. The local weather agency denies responsibility, but in the same press release also stated, "Our Bring Your Kids to Work Day was a great success." Dead Meat GF has been contacted for comment, but he was last seen running away with a big fan and giggling to himself. A coincidence? Sure, why not? But on a more serious note, if anyone is finding themselves caught out by hurricanes, please look after yourself and take the advice of the authorities and give you... Let me read that a bit again, because it's important. Take the advice of the authorities that they give you and make sure you look after each other in true Hutton fashion.
Welcome to the Hutton BGS bit, where we peek behind the curtain of the BGS, see something we shouldn't, and then have nightmares for a week. We start with some influence news. Both Van Manen Star and our home system, Alpha Centauri, have poked their heads above our 60% influence threshold. Van Manen Star is recovering from an infrastructure failure and is into boom now, so let's keep an eye on that, but leave it alone. The booms this week are in WISE 0855-0714, PSPF LF2, Wolf 359, 36 of Viucci, Barnard Star, George's Pants, Wolf 124 and their Nerenses. EP Eridani sees us in a massive elections with the Liberals of EP Eridani. Nice. And, well, that's about it. But what does it all mean? Our best guess is if you want to truck it, then go to EP Eridani and truck it for Hutton with trade and non-violent missions. If you want to shoot it, then let Vulcarius point you in the right direction for something to shoot at. And well, that's it for this week.
Well, that went well.
Yeah, I didn't see any seams.
It could have gone worse.
not a seam in sight.
I'm just finishing the form now.
Yeah, pity it's a radio show.
And that's just for my bit.
Yes, the rest of us were totally blameless, Mia. Totally blameless.
Yeah, absolutely blameless, yes. I mean, it was flawless from what I saw. Okay, can I ask this question then? Because I never get to really ask a question.
Oh, go on.
Is there a Frontier live stream this week?
Nah. You see, you ask it, but it's not a good answer.
No, it's not, is it?
No, it's the last Wednesday of the month, still.
Okay.
So, a couple of weeks.
Not quite Halloween.
Yeah,
3 weeks.
That'll be the 30th.
Yeah, we get to do a proper spooky show this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the shows where every time somebody starts talking to the microphone, you hear the doorbell in the background and loads of kids turning up.
So you'll be doing the show in the dark.
That depends on what you put outside your house. I've seen some good stuff.
Hmm. Extra points for someone who carves a Hutton Orbital pumpkin this year.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, soon we'll be doing some space news.
I guess we probably should. Shall I hit the button?
Yeah, you hit the button.
3, 2, 1.
I'm sorry, Litho. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
It's a new computer.
But there's so much space news.
I know. Okay, I'll try again.
Auto-destruct initiated.
This is getting worse.
You're going to end up with a toffee crisp and a milkshake in a minute.
Yeah, let's try this one.
I love toffee crisp. When you don't.
So, are they still up there?
Yeah, but the lift home's arrived.
All right, so they'll be back on Earth really soon then?
Not exactly. February?
Oh. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Who plans these things?
NASA.
No one. That's who. Bloody no one.
Boeing.
Boeing, yes. Well, Boeing planned the first part of it.
Mm-hmm. They planned the first 8 days.
Yeah, the rest of their plan didn't happen really, did it?
Yeah.
So they're up there for a while.
Somebody heard go big or go home and decided to go big.
Yes.
They're going to be up there for Christmas, New Year and Halloween.
Yeah.
Yep.
Away from kids, their families, all the food and the... It sounds fucking brilliant.
Yeah, it does,
doesn't it? I
wonder
what Christmas dinner on a space station looks like. Now, there's a question.
Tube of toothpaste.
It comes in a bag.
Yeah, the meals are better than that these days, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the people I really feel sorry for are the two people who should have been crew and have had to be bumped.
Oh, yeah, they've been bumped to make space.
Because it's never fun when you get bumped off a Boeing to make space for somebody else that's got a priority ticket.
Yeah, that would rather depend on the Boeing, if I'm honest.
Of all of them, I think I'd rather not fly on a Starliner.
Yeah, or a 777 that's the dodgy one with the door.
737 MAX.
737 MAX,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're absolutely
fine now.
Yeah.
And it's a different 737 that's got problems with the tail rudder.
Uh-huh. Oh, so it's not the same one.
It's a different model of the 737. And it is indeed the Boeing factory where the work has gone on strike and Boeing have taken the previous offer off the table and said there will be no more negotiation.
All right.
Yeah, so, things are looking really rosy. It's time to buy those Boeing shares just now.
Yeah, but I think if you say we're taking the offer off the table and there'll be no more negotiation and people are on strike, you kind of go, well, that strike's going to go on for a while then, isn't it?
Mm. But given that, given that the company's struggling to survive at the moment, then it's not a good time to go on strike.
Possibly not, no. But there you go. So we're back in February then.
Yeah, back in February. We can keep pestering them every couple of weeks to see if they're coming back early. But
yes.
But at least their ride's arrived.
You know, when they actually come back, there's going to be such a big hole in our script.
Yeah. So who wants to do the next one?
I'm just reading it now. So apparently there's a rare brightening comet seen passing Earth, and it was spotted from Hawaii.
Hawaii.
And they used a telescope to spot it, but it says brightening, so I'm not sure what that means. Does that mean it's heading towards the sun?
No, it's already passed its closest approach with the sun. It's heading back towards, if it's the comet, I think it is. But it's getting brighter when they didn't expect it to, hence the term brightening.
Okay, it's called Atlas.
Yeah, because that's what discovered it.
Yeah, okay. So then, all right. So I wonder why it's getting brighter then. That's weird. I think somebody
does they've got a video of it appearing.
It's burning up. Maybe it's going next to something really hot that we can't see.
Something really hot that we can't see. Okay. Scary. That's a bit scary. As long as there's something really hot isn't drifting our way, you know.
And on the subject of meteors, let's go to number three. So this one.
This one is
the Draconids.
The Draconids.
I read that as the Draculas, so
I know. Wow.
Every single year I try and see these things. And every single year it's overcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't even live in Scotland.
I know, right?
Yeah.
No, but she's Scottish, so the clouds follow.
Scottish, yeah.
that'll be why.
Well, you'll be needing some clouds there, hen. Oh dear.
So will the skies be clear? They've even got a section on it. And the answer is no. Probably not.
Yeah. But look at that picture, that's beautiful.
What's that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the one with the wee chops and the Milky Way and...
What's happening across our skies this month?
Oh no, it's got people talking in it. I'm not playing that.
Yeah, no, we don't want that. No. Is it they're still on the BBC, isn't it? Yeah, BBC Weather.
Yeah.
You've got a few things to say about that, haven't you?
Yes.
Great news. Solar storms and northern lights and things.
Well, there's a pretty bit. We'll pause it on that.
Yeah.
Solar storms and lights and things?
Yes.
I need to push another button.
I'm afraid so. We're getting through these at a rate of knots.
Good, there's enough of them. So there's a solar storm coming and we could get a light show.
What is it?
Huge solar flare, biggest since 2017.
The biggest since 2017.
That was, it was barely a month ago. We had that, was it X9.1 solar flare?
Yeah, but they're not on a scale of 1 to 10.
Yeah, they're on a logarithmic scale.
But the biggest recently recorded was 43, an X43. So 9.1's not that amazing. Still X-class, which is pretty impressive.
X is the biggest letter class. And
yes.
Yeah, that's already trounced a previous space news from not that long ago.
Are you the official space news keeper of the records? Because we definitely need one.
No, I just have
he only does solar flares.
I just have a selective solar flare memory, I suppose.
Yeah. Solar flares also available from Eddie Lee Wisenson's plus his daughters.
They are, yeah. In a variety of interesting and exciting colours.
And patterns.
Mm.
So, and fabrics. So it looks like, I don't know if we'll have had it then, if the solar flares erupted.
They take a while to get here.
Do they? I thought it would only take, like, you know, I thought it would be like this 8.5 minute thing.
No, that's light speed. These are much, much slower.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah. So we can expect it sometime soon, which will be nice. If you, as long as you don't like anything electronic.
Yeah. You're not fond of any computers or mobile phones or, you know, power grids, are you?
Satellites, yeah, no, maybe.
Yeah, satellites, stuff like that. GPS, well, sat-nav. You know.
I meant to look into this, actually. What they do to protect the satellites is often really clever. They'll turn them away from the sun and they'll angle them so they've got the least from area and all sorts. It's, someone's really thought about this.
Oh, yeah. You know something, though? Those astronauts might become a home sooner than they think.
Yeah.
Oh, no! Aim for a blue bit. But, yes, another picture of a wee building in the country with some trees. Fantastic. I want to be able to see them at some point. It would be nice to see the Northern Lights. And it looks like this is going to be the best chance this year.
Yeah. So keep your eye out. So late Friday, early Saturday.
Early Saturday. That's tomorrow.
Yeah, can hang out on this. Cool. Yeah. So tomorrow night, stay up.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. And hope it's not cloudy.
Well, it's meant to be clearing up for the weekend, so.
Yeah, you never know.
Those 186,000 mile an hour winds seem to be clearing things out, so.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. If not, the 404 degree temperatures will soon burn that off.
Yeah, true. So, moving on.
Yes.
Who wants a dinosaur killer?
Let's have a look. Dinosaur killer.
Yes, no, that killed the dinosaurs was not alone.
Oh, it was Chicholub, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Glad you pronounced that. I hate trying to pronounce that one.
apparently, a second smaller one went into the sea off the coast of West Africa.
Oh, it brought a friend with it.
Yeah. I wonder if it brought a friend or if a bit broke off.
I was going to ask exactly the same.
It says in the same era, but it doesn't necessarily mention that they were at the same time, if you know what I mean.
Well, if it had broken off, it would either miss completely or hit within seconds. Yeah. So.
But imagine if you'd gone through the Chicholub one and you thought, oh, I'm still alive. Everything's good, but I'm still alive, and here comes another one. You're like, oh, no. Mind you could be a dinosaur, so maybe you wouldn't. I don't know. But
Is that how they found it, that crater, or is that a different crater?
One in the picture's a different crater.
Oh, they've put it in terms for you. Imagine the asteroid was hitting Glasgow.
I was about to say.
Yeah.
We'd all homed in on that. I was just thinking, imagine an asteroid.
I'm just going to sit here and imagine that for a while.
Yeah. Cause £5 million worth of improvements.
Yeah, and increase the metal value of the city.
Yes, 24 times the size of the sun in the sky. You know?
Yes, a voice was heard saying, ask your mother to stitch that, and it bounced back.
A voice was heard saying, oh no, the clouds just cleared, the nerve, get this. I think it's something to do with Glasgow University, so yeah. And it would set trees and plants on fire in Edinburgh. Well, it's not all bad.
Yeah.
So apparently the Nadir crater is underwater, so there's no photograph of that, but there's a picture there of a very similar one called Goose Bluff crater in Australia. There's a picture of that. Now it looks like it's got a wee... I'm trying to look and see what's in the middle of there. Is that... looks like farmland. I can see a river going through the middle of it. That's pretty big.
Yeah,
not just a maze.
It could be a maze. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
You did a pun.
Imagine where would you put a road in and out of the place?
Obviously, the edge.
Oh, I never thought of that. I was going to dig a hole straight down and go under, but no, your idea's even better.
Well, I suppose from Australia, it's a good direction to head. I mean, they do call it down under, so.
Yeah, you'll be in Europe in no time. So, this thing came with it as well and had a wee smashy up and, you know.
Yeah. Oh. So I wonder if it was...
looks good. I quite like it.
Wonder if it was a pair that were in orbit around each other like the ones we've got coming up in 2 stories time.
Yeah, possibly.
But anyway, moving on to the story between here and there.
moving on to the story between that one, this one and that one. I don't think I know this one.
Unfortunately, this one's got a magic transparent background that I couldn't get rid of. So,
how beautiful.
Oh, this is going to be fun to read, isn't it? Yeah, so I put this one in because the FAA has forgiven SpaceX, but only a little bit, because they've let them fly one more time just for good measure. Yeah, they are.
Is that something to benefit NASA? Is that why they're allowed to fly one more time?
The SpaceX Falcon 9 vehicle is authorized to return to flight only for the planned Hera mission. The next news story, scheduled to launch on the 7th of October.
3 days ago.
So, wait a minute. I mean, is there like laws to say people can't leave the planet if they want?
No, but there's laws about flying through controlled airspace. So, the same way as you can't just walk up to a random airport and take off without clearing yourself with air traffic control. Yeah. Same applies to space flights.
You'd have thought if you had a launch pad in the middle of the Atlantic, that should be fine.
Yes.
Yeah, but then planes fly over the Atlantic, so, you know.
Yeah, but on very well-known corridors.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I suppose if your launch pad's in the middle of the Atlantic, it's international waters, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, like there's no FAA.
Who cares about the FAA? Yeah.
Yep.
But would you like to know how they've managed to make it safe to launch?
Sticky tape.
Bearing in mind that the last launch, they failed to have a second stage separation, I believe, or second stage re-entry for this mission. So what they've done is they've turned it off. They're just not going to do the second stage. They're just going to carry on anyway.
It's okay. Yeah, we've turned that off, so we don't need a license for it now. All right. Wow.
Put a bit of sticky tape over the button and said, do not press.
This does sound like what friends of mine have done for MOT. That's the safety test for our Yank friends.
Take the back seat out because the rear seatbelts don't work.
Or put gaffer tape over the sharp bits on the outer part of the car because then they're not sharp anymore.
No, that's a legitimate fix.
Yes.
So the thing is, though, if you switch off the second stage, what happens after the first stage?
You'll probably find that they're just burning more first stage because the Falcon 9 usually has a lot more fuel capacity than it actually needs for most of the launches it does. It may mean they can't recover the Falcon 9, but that might be the way they decided to do it.
What if they separate it in space?
It's the getting it to space that's the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, if they fire it up into space and then separate it when it's in space, nobody's in charge of that either.
Actually, no. The launch country's laws apply.
Ah, okay.
Because there are laws about space junk and stuff like that.
This is how we're going to end up with rockets flying out of Scotland.
Aye. Because everybody knows that Scottish law is completely incomprehensible.
Yes, exactly. Well, they've got a spaceport at up in Sutherland somewhere, haven't they? They're talking about building one in the Orkneys. Is it Orkney or Shetland somewhere? And Prestwick Airport was getting looked at one point as well.
Yeah, I think that was for horizontal takeoff, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because
it's got a massively long runway. It's something like 8,000 metres or something like that. It's huge.
Good grief.
Yeah.
It was a big old bird that was trying to fly out of that thing, though. It was like an aeroplane in an aeroplane, so it needs more aeroplane.
Yes.
Nothing's happened with that for a while. I've not heard anything about that Virgin Galactic for a while.
Not since it blew up, broke apart and fell into the water, no?
No, they've flown it again since it killed the crew. And they survived the next time. But they've got a lot of reworking to do to make sure it's actually safe before they put people on it again. So, it's gone quiet for a while.
But would you like to know what they were carrying? They were going up into space to play darts.
No. They've already played darts. They're going up into space to count the score and check which side of the wire it landed. They want to make sure it was a double.
And make sure nobody was over the Orkney.
So it's pictured the same launch.
Mm-hmm.
Have we got any better pictures in here? Because pictures were...
There's if the top image you can scroll through, and it's got pictures of asteroids. All the way to the top, and it's that top one. Yes. There's a little arrow at the bottom.
Yeah.
It's teeny tiny.
There we go. Asteroids. There we go. Didymus and Didymoon. Sorry, Didymus and Dimorphos. Should give it its real name. Yeah, that's where it's going. It's the asteroid that NASA took offence at and shot with the Dark Mission. Yeah. So they know that it had a much bigger effect than they were expecting when they hit it with DART. But
yep.
They want to get something in much closer to really study just how badly they messed it up. Because it's quite a long way from Earth, and tracking it by radar is not the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah, and I think with the ways they had to view it, the telescopes and things that were available to them, you couldn't see a lot of detail.
Well, no, because it's so flipping far away. They had a few bits and pieces on the DART mission, but yeah. And Didymoon is even smaller, as you can see from the two dots on there. So yeah, it was always the plan that there would be a follow-up mission from ESA that went and had a look, and Hera has just taken off.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure when it's due to get there. See if I can find this in the...
Yeah.
That's a damage 22, blah, blah, blah. Falcon 9 carrying it. It's Deimos and Didymus. Stars was on that. Spacecraft arrived, blah, 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 blah. Lots of asteroids around. No, it doesn't say.
Yeah. It does call it a near-Earth asteroid, though, so, you know.
Well, near-Earth asteroid
there's
means...
It means there's
at some point in its orbit it crosses Earth's orbit. It could be in perfect resonance and always on the opposite side, which is 300 million kilometres away, or not. But, yeah, it's...
It'll be interesting to see it anyway.
Yeah.
See what it actually... Because the plan was to knock it off course, wasn't it?
Well, the plan was to change the orbit of the little diddy moonlet that orbits Dimorphos.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, sorry. I can't remember what
Didymus.
The code.
Didymus.
Thank you.
Yeah, but
Dimorphos is the moon.
Yes.
The diddy one is not the little one. Just to confuse things. That's why it was Didymus and Diddy Moon.
Right.
But Dimorphos is the moon of Didymus. So,
I see. Yeah.
But when they hit it, it fired off a huge plume of dust that went back the way it came, which meant that the effective kinetic energy imparted into it was... the effective momentum imparted into it was greater than the momentum of the probe, which seemed impossible at first until you realised just how much ejector there'd been that went the opposite way and basically acted like a rocket engine.
Okay.
So it was significantly more impactful in impact than they were expecting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was a raging success, the DART mission.
Yeah, but you know what?
Oh, that's more like, that's not so much propelling backwards as it is losing a bit of the mass it was going to affect, that the momentum was going to affect.
Yeah, but it's not a failure. Because it got there and it hit the thing. So they can go and measure it now and see, and then make calculations based on that. And, you know, they know what happens now when you smash a probe into an asteroid.
Yeah, it goes splut.
They've only done it once. When they hit one asteroid.
Yeah.
Yes. Is it repeatable?
They're all the same.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's fine. Yeah, they're all the same. You don't need to do an experiment twice.
It's no.
These alien asteroids, they're all the same. Coming over here, stealing our asteroid fields.
Given his metal.
Given his metal. Yeah. Aye. Which, you know, you can go up with your magnet. You can go up with your magnet and do the gutters. Yeah.
Yeah, and you'll get loads of Victorian era pollution.
Yeah, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly a bit of lead poisoning.
Probably. Yeah, just don't lick it.
I didn't think lead was magnetic, was it?
If you lick the roof dust, you'll probably find some lead.
Yeah, the magnet will pick up the ferrous stuff. You know, and if you're picking up some Victorian pollution, you're probably going to pick up some lead as well, because, you know, everything was either covered in lead or arsenic back then.
Or mercury.
Or mercury. No, yeah. No, you drunk the mercury.
Go home, mercury, you're drunk.
Yes.
So, moving on.
Yes.
How's Boeing doing? Have they had any good news recently?
That
would depend entirely on who you ask.
Well, they did have some good news in that the Starliner did land, apparently safely. Although they've no checked if it would cut off the air to the crew on the way down yet. But yeah. You know, apart from that, that's probably the best bit of good news I've had in a while.
No, the good news was that the Vulcan rocket, which is Boeing Lockheed's ULA's replacement for the one that they don't launch anymore.
Ah, okay.
Launched successfully. Its second really? Successful launch. So yeah, something that Boeing touched went right.
Second successful launch of how many attempts?
Two.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah, that's all right then.
Mm.
Yeah. I'm going to go look at this thing.
Lucky it must have built this bit.
If you were flick on to the third image, and I know it's because of winds and things, but it just makes it look like it can't quite decide if it wanted to go up or not. It just sort of...
yeah.
kind of meandered its way into space.
That does look cool.
That looks like me playing Kerbal Space Program. No, left, no, right, no, left, no, the other right, no, left, no, 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 right.
It's gambling!
I think that's Super Cruise Overcharge.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah.
Ludicrous speed engaged. Somebody turn the thrusters up to 11.
The fifth image also does make it look like it exploded. It kind of looks like a screen capture from the Challenger disaster or something.
It's really
like,
does, doesn't it?
It's
yeah.
a really odd image to use.
It looks like they have... I mean, it does look like the single rocket booster firing off into distance
yes.
after the explosion. It's really... Yeah, it's a bit creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'll take that one back off the picture.
Yeah.
That's a nice one. So, that's it for Space News.
Is that the Space News all done?
That's the Space News all done. So, let's hit that magic button. Space news. Which means it's time for that immortal question. Vulcarius, are you ready?
Yep.
We're flying high in the black face, the Thargoid threat. Vulcarius leads away, no fear, no regrets. Guides are tight in his breath, saving humankind. Together we'll defend, never fall behind. Whoa, keep your lasers clear. Whoa, Vulcarius is here, fighting on floor. No fear tonight. Whoa, Vulcarius lights the fight. Across the stars, I miss you so clear. Vulcarius stands tall, there'll be no fear. Navigates the void with his crew so tight. In the darkest space, he's our guiding light. Whoa, keep your lasers lit. Whoa, Vulcarius is here. Fight the onslaught, no fear tonight. Whoa, Vulcarius lights the fight.
As the Perfidious Pilots Federation Pan-Galactic Peristeronic Postal System doubtless has conveyed, amongst its ample amphigorical articles are such items as Titan Rygen continues to lose ground. This is, of course, bum-fuzzling bunkum, but Titan Rygen is losing space, though, as its remaining control systems have toppled to the tenuous titty-nope total of only 10. One of which is already ours, so well done to everyone who captured Kamenisar, and judging by what can only have been a good Titan rescue boost, very well done also to Operation Thunderstruck and anyone else extracting biostorage capsules. Every Rygen system is now in Counter-Strike, so that means all remaining inhabited systems have ports online. With Kamenisar already done, that leaves Bragua, Marines, Sao Chun, and Pegasi Sector FW-W, Delta 1-111. We're not quite done after those, because we still need to take at least two of its empty systems as well, of which the leaders are Pegasi Sector IH-U, B3-6, and JH-UB3-7. Anything more there is just for the sake of completion, because the Titan will then go vulnerable next Thursday. That's the 17th of October, 3310, 1 week's time. So use this week to get your core-killing spacecraft ready to ride. If you can't find a parking spot or don't have a carrier, just hop onto something with some jump range, fly to one of our recaptured systems, such as Ongarango or Mora, and transfer your Titan tech over there. Once Raijin runs out of targets, by all means continuing snuffing out the spire sites around Titan Casio, maybe also the three invasions and one alert if you're still good to keep progress there on the go. But remember to roll back over on Wednesday evening, because come Thursday, the reckoning of Raijin awaits. The new power play plan pervades our galaxy on Tuesday, so if we can get a meltdown started on Monday, we could even watch the Raijin wreckage rising from the mouth of Mandalay. And that's it.
Sagittarius on the airwaves, shouting out the fight. Farboy Best Rising, gotta stand up tonight. Just for taking Titans, we keep humanity strong.
Do we have a word of the week?
You bet we do. The word of the week this week is poppycock.
Oh, poppycock. What does that mean?
It's a word I actually know this time, which is useful. It means senseless talk, stuff of nonsense.
Stuff of nonsense. Can you use it in a sentence, please?
Oh, you just watch me, I believe is the correct thing to say. All the talk of this Panther clipper being released was just poppycock.
Boom.
Well done.
but according to you, all my talk was too loquacious for you.
Maybe there were so many big words.
Maybe I should assuage the next one. So
I'm going to find a belter. You better be here next week.
For those of you who are interested, the spelling and the meaning is now ticker taping across our Twitch stream in the form of a headline.
So it's nothing to do with sticking one of those little red flowers. Oh, never mind.
No.
And it really hurt.
And I'm going to read this according to the script. Do we have a spicy fart of the week?
Yes, we do have a spicy. There's a space fact song. There we go. Lots of space facts. I thought he was singing bean fart straight to your brain. Anyway.
Well, that's what it says in the script.
Anyway, did you know the Russian cosmonauts took a gun to space with them? Now, the TP-82 survival pistol wasn't to be used for fending off decadent Westerners or for repelling marauding Thargoids. The pistol was not for use in space at all, but rather for self-defense and survival in the Siberian wilderness. The origins of the cosmonaut survival pistol date back to 1965 when cosmonaut Alexei Leonov, you can see why I picked his name, landed off course in Siberia. The capsule landed hundreds of miles away from its original landing spot where the recovery crew was waiting for him. So he was hundreds of miles away from where he should have been. Siberia is known for its ferocious wildlife such as Siberian tigers, wolves and bears. The cosmonaut would need a survival weapon to survive. That's the name. And these dangers to survive among these dangerous predators. This gun is a three-barreled firearm that can use two different calibers of bullet. The top two barrels of the gun are smoothbore, which helps the pistol in firing like a Russian shotgun or a 40-gauge pistol. The third and bottom barrel is rifled and can be used as chamber for rifle rounds of improved range and accuracy, which can help the cosmonaut in hunting. The rifle chamber of the TP-82 cosmonaut survival pistol is effectively the same as an AK-74 rifle of Russian origins. and you get pictures of it all over the internet. It's just weird looking.
I just looked it up. It's like a wooden version of the Manticore Tormentor pistol.
Yes, I thought exactly that.
I was going to say, for future reference, maybe when we're doing items, we could get a picture.
I really should have got a picture for this one, yes.
What a good idea. So,
yeah, imagine that.
why didn't we think of that?
Yeah, you probably did. I didn't.
It's also breech loaded. The barrel drops down and you load it.
It's break open load for all three barrels.
And I think at some point, if you're really shitting yourself, you can fire all three barrels at once.
That would have some kick.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it would move you far enough away from the animal. If it didn't kill the animal, at least you'd be far enough away to start running.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And apparently what they do with these is they present them to the commander of whatever mission it's been when they land and they come back. They go, here, you get to have the gun from the survival pack. Which is nice. So anyway, that's it for Spicy Farts of the Week.
Yep. So let's... Space facts. Lots of space facts that everyone wants to know. They need to know. Think from bottom straight to your brain. Straight to your brain. Which I guess means it's time for everybody's favourite part of the show. Over to Flossie with her CG news.
It's Flossie, and the community goes.
Hello, Flossie here once again with this week's CG News. Except there isn't any, sorry. No CGs this week, what can I say?
Flossie's got no task, no work, no play. The galaxy's calm, no goals in sight. Just sit back and relax, everything's alright. No hauling, no fighting, no tasks to do. Flossie's got no news, it's all up to you. So grab a mug of gin, or maybe two. This week is quiet, no CGs for you. No calls for trucks, no missions to bring. Not a single thing, not a single ping. The stars are quiet, the stations too. Guess it's time to chill, nothing's on cue. No hauling, no fighting, no tasks to do. Flossie's got no news, it's all up to you. So grab a mug of gin, or maybe two. This week is quiet, no CGs for you. No missions to bring. Not a single thing, not a single ping. The stars are quiet, the stations too. Guess it's time to chill, nothing's on cue.
No hauling, no fighting, no tasks to do. Flossie's got no news, it's all up to you. So grab a mug of gin, or maybe two. This week is quiet, no CDs for you.
Aww.
Flossie told you what to do.
Well, after that sad, sad news, I guess it's time to head over to Beetlejuice and Wotherspoon to see if they can lift the mood.
Galnet News Update, 10th of October, 3310. The sixth out of seven Titans, Titan Raijin, is likely to be destroyed next weekend, just before the planned reorganisation of the galactic powers. With only 10 controlled systems left, it seems highly improbable that Raijin could remain invulnerable past Thursday next week. 5 of the 10 systems it controls have starports that have been brought back into service, and 2 of the systems also have ground ports under attack. The other 5 systems have no history of human habitation. Raijin has no remaining functioning spire sites. Assuming at least 7 of these remaining Thargoid-controlled systems are won back, Titan Raijin will become vulnerable from Thursday the 17th of October. Commanders are reminded that they must do 2 million credits worth of damage to the Titan's heat core in the 7 days leading up to its destruction to earn the extra star on their decal. Shard cannons engineered by Ramtar to resist Thargoid damage are the weapons of choice for this activity, paired of course with a nanite torpedo for disrupting the heat vents and exposing the thermal core in the first place. Based on previous Titans, the longest Raijin is likely to last would be Monday, with an impressive explosion no later than Tuesday the 22nd, which is the day President Hudson and Chancellor Anders Blaine retire, Jerome Archer becomes Shadow President, Felicia Winters becomes actual President, Nakato Kane becomes the Second Alliance Power, Zamina Torval becomes the Imperial Chancellor, and possibly one or two other changes that we don't know about yet. If we're lucky, perhaps Archon Delane, the Galactic Jack Sparrow wannabe, will go away. For commanders who've become used to regular drops of engineering materials in recognition of their anti-Thargoid activities, pledging to one of these new powers will ensure the supply of materials is maintained, and will also, as you rank up, grant access to those power-exclusive modules, some of which are worth having. Just how community goals will work when the Power Play security services are shooting at 11/12 of the participants will be interesting to find out. Thankfully for explorers, we'll also be getting access to the Mandalay exploration ship, which should make escaping the power's hired muscle a piece of cake.
Psst, Mia.
I didn't know it was me. That happened while I was away eating chocolate. Anyway, seamless. Thank you, Beetlejuice and Wotherspoon. And now, been a while, we have Amelia Hawk with the Galnet Rares Digest.
You are about to listen to Amelia Hawk. She tries all the galaxy's most dangerous rare items, so you don't have to.
Investigating something surprisingly elusive. Biscuits. Now, you might be thinking, biscuits? Really? But yes. Commanders, these delightful, crunchy treats have become increasingly rare, even if they aren't quite on the level of the mythical rare cheese. You'd think a simple biscuit would be easy to source in a galaxy full of trade hubs, but no. Turns out biscuits, particularly the coveted custard creams and chocolate bourbons, are suffering from an interstellar supply crisis. There are a few reasons for this. Ongoing wheat shortages in the outer colonies, restrictions on sugar exports, and an increasing demand for low-calorie alternatives across corporate systems. Apparently, biscuits are just too indulgent for some planetary diets. As for biscuits and cheese, well, no cheese, no biscuits. Most space stations, especially those under Federation control, have tightened their grip on high-calorie foods, something they're calling interstellar snacking control. It's a bureaucratic nightmare designed to keep pilots from getting a case of what they call zero-G gut. Honestly, if you're going to be stuck in a cockpit for days on end, you need snacks. Pilots have reported their moods plummeting since the crackdown. Imagine flying from Seoul to Colonia without a digestive biscuit for company. Naturally, this shortage was unacceptable to me. So I set off to track down a cache of biscuits, dragging poor Steve along for the ride. Now, I wasn't looking for anything fancy. Just a nice tin of shortbread or, if the stars aligned, a packet of ginger snaps. You'd think that would be easy, right? Our journey took us from Listi to Diso, where I had a hot tip that a local trader was hoarding a secret stash of digestives. Sadly, no luck. We moved on to Dahan, and there, in the corner of a dusty old market stall, we finally found what we were after. A crate of biscuits. Or so we thought. As always, things took a turn when Steve, bless his clumsy hands, opened the crate. Suddenly a green mist billowed out like something out of a horror holovid. Was it alien spores? Thargoid infestation? I immediately grabbed Mooncake and ducked behind a sack of cargo crates. It turns out, no, it wasn't aliens. Just biscuits gone bad. I mean, really bad. Apparently these biscuits had been sitting in storage for so long that they'd developed some kind of strange fungal growth. Naturally, Steve started wheezing. I handed him an antifungal spray and told him to keep breathing through his shirt, though that didn't stop him from knocking over a barrel of synthetic tea in his panic. After fighting off the fungus with handheld weaponry and a small pocket tactical nuclear grenade, we did manage to salvage a few tasty-looking morsels. I bravely decided to try one of the chocolate bourbons. One bite, crispy, buttery, just the right amount of chocolate. And then I heard it. The unmistakable sound of Steve slipping on something. Apparently one of the fermented, fungus-covered biscuits had a delayed chemical reaction with the tea. The floor turned into foam, engulfing Steve's boots. Meanwhile, Mooncake, sitting on my shoulder, watched the whole scene unfold with wide eyes, clearly traumatized by the idea of spacefaring sentient biscuits. For the sake of the digest, I soldiered on and tried a shortbread next. No foam this time, but Steve had already taken a spill and was getting gently attacked by an opportunistic cargo drone. I knew better than to ask what went wrong this time. Are biscuits worth the hunt? Absolutely. But between the exploding shortbread foam incidents and biscuit-loving alien species, rumor has it that the Thargoids have taken a liking to custard creams, the galaxy's favorite snacks might be more trouble than they're worth. It seems every rare commodity we chase has its dangers, but who knew biscuits would be the one to nearly take out Steve? For now, I recommend sticking to something a little less hazardous. Like, I don't know, Karsuki locusts. I mean, they might look icky, but at least they don't foam all over your boots. This is Amelia Hawk reporting for the Galnet Rares Digest. And, oh look, some hobnobs!
biscuits. Thank you, Amelia. That's put me right off biscuits.
You've never been the same since Lewis.
I think I'm after a biscuit right now. Yeah, I had some in the cupboard.
I saw some of those images, though.
I am currently craving white chocolate and macadamia nut cookies.
Okay, now I'm back on biscuits. Thank you. Much better.
I don't necessarily agree with your assessment of bourbon creams, though. Well, just the right amount of chocolate, you're joking. They could have at least a coating of chocolate on them as well.
Yeah, that's just the right amount.
You have to go
to Marks and Spencer.
If you're like really into the chocolate, you can get bourbon biscuits that are half dunked in chocolate and ones that are fully dunked in chocolate.
I am unaware of such things. You've changed my life.
And failing that, you can always buy chocolate and dunk them yourself.
Or buy a packet of Penguin biscuits, which are bourbon and chocolate.
Or you could just buy chocolate and, you know, eat it.
Yeah. Has anyone tried Just Divine biscuits?
No.
They do them in Aldi. And
are they just...
Just Divine and there's a salted caramel one. Oh.
Are they just divine?
It's called Just Divine.
Are they just divine?
Oh, they are, yes.
No, they're just biscuits.
For fully chocolate covered bourbons and fully chocolate covered custard creams, put Marks and Spencer and they sell them there.
I do like a custard cream.
Lower than the horse.
Yeah, but this is a custard cream covered in chocolate.
I think it would be extra special if it was dunked in chocolate.
Mm-hmm. I spy obesity in my near future.
Oh, I've been suffering from that for years.
I've already got mine.
Now, do you know the origin of the word biscuit? Probably.
Yes.
I'm going to say no. Somebody has to.
French for twice baked.
Yeah, it is that. It's literally by cuy being cooking or cooked. It's twice cooked, yeah.
I miss Ed Lewis's biscuit reviews.
Yes.
Crystallised ginger cookies half dunked in chocolate.
Just buy dark chocolate gingers.
Yeah, but it's not the same. You get the crystallised ginger ones and they have like these little gooey chunks of
chewy bits in them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, ginger snaps. Why not just go full out ginger biscuit?
Because you break your teeth
eating ginger snaps. They work better dunked in tea.
If you dunk it in tea and then suck the tea out the biscuit. Oh, ginger tea.
Yeah, three or four times and it softens the biscuit up enough to eat.
You're questioning David's biscuit choices and he's not even here to defend himself.
But ginger snaps are good. I'm just saying crystallised stem ginger.
We have a jar of it in the cupboard upstairs.
Yeah.
Crystallised ginger and biscuits.
We have half a jar of it in the cupboard.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you get Borders biscuits down there?
Yes.
No. Borders dark chocolate gingers. I'm sure they get wee chewy bits of crystallised ginger in them.
They do. They never last long enough to notice.
The ones you put the kettle on to make a cup of tea,
you open the pack, and by the time you've made the tea, they've gone.
The ones I got were from Lidl.
And
they're like full-on cookie-size biscuits.
Yep, that's the ones.
Yeah, they were really good.
Two sideways stacks of them in there, like a plasticky container wrapped in foily.
I went through a box of them in like 20 minutes.
That's a bit slow. Were they off?
Yeah, try harder.
Sorry, I'll try harder next time.
You know, there's a radio show, Radio 6. They do crisps on the radio. I wonder if there's a new feature that we could slot in. Biscuits on the radio.
Yeah. We'd be stealing it from Ed, though.
Biscuits in space.
That's the great title.
Biscuits in space.
We'll review a different type of biscuit each week.
Yeah, but somebody would have to work it out in advance and ship them around to everyone so we can all review the same biscuit.
I have no objection to that.
Yep, I'm up for it.
Yep, sounds like we've got a new theme for the show.
It's no longer Hutton Orbital, it's Biscuits in Space.
I'm now trying to desperately make that into a... Hot something.
We need a theme tune.
Yeah.
hot cookies.
Oh, that's disappointingly normal.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably a good time to say we're done for the night.
Yes, very possibly.
And is anybody capable of doing the loud thing, or is everybody blocked?
Mooncake is currently asleep on my lap, so it's going to be a quiet one this week.
Oh, can I just do a quick shout out for Dark Harris on the Twitch, who's just posted for the biscuits rather than for the mug.
For the biscuits.
Actually, you know, Gray could substitute and do the shout.
I really can't. I have children sleeping upstairs.
Wake them up!
No!
Flossie's really good at the shout.
You can do it if you want. There's nobody else here.
I think what we need to do is get all of us to find a time when we can record a nice loud shout and just randomise, because there's too many weeks when nobody can do it. So if we had a couple of backup, if we had a couple of backup shouts, it could be handy. Yeah. You know, in case of emergency, break glass and hit button.
Yes. Just one with everybody shouting at once.
But for now, let's do a little quiet klaxon and then we'll all whisper it at once, okay?
Oh, yeah, right. Whispering, right.
So, no, my klaxon's broken. Aruga, aruga, okay. Aruga.
Right, I'll do it then.
Go on, shout for us.
For the mug!
For the mug!
Mug, 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 mug.
Mug, mug, mug.
Biscuit.
Journey too long, or cargo too small. Profit margins never really mattered at all. You're gonna take the cargo where it's needed today. Super cruising all across the Milky Way. We're taking anything, anytime, anywhere. Loading all the teen out to the brim with the rest for the more.
For the more.
For the more.
For the more.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the more.
For the more.
For the more.
For the more.
Yeah, everybody's seen the trucker song. Flossie always seems to crash into the sun. Skibble ice, the pilot on the Xbox One. Helping out the free, you know he leads us well. Trucking across the galaxy, now everybody yell. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
Everybody's seen the hunting trucker's song. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
You know just where we're coming from. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
Everybody's seen the hunting trucker's song. Give me a large path that I can land on, and I'll give you cargo and sing you my song. No point 22 light years to go, cruising to no journey too long, no cargo too small. The profit margins never really mattered at all. Gonna take the cargo where it's needed today. Super cruising all across the Milky Way. We're taking anything, anytime, anywhere. So
shout it out loud, like you don't even care for the moth. For the moth,
for the moth.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the moth,
for the moth,
for the moth.
For the moth.
Everybody sing the Chucker's song. For the moth,
for the moth,
for the moth.
For the moth.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the moth,
for the moth,
for the moth. Everybody sing the Chucker's song.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're very sorry, but that's the end of the show. Everyone's buggered off now, so why don't you bugger off too?
Seamless.